Hi, welcome to episode 5 of Voices from the Center. This is Scott Bassenecker. Today we're talking about muscular dystrophy. I remember growing up and watching the Jerry Lewis MDA telethon every Memorial Day weekend. It was just an excuse to stay up all night and watch TV. But I remember the feelings evoked by that telethon. Often they were ones of sorrow or pity for those who had muscular dystrophy. And I wonder if that's the right attitude, the right posture to have. I don't think so. I've had the privilege of getting to know a number of people with varieties of handicaps and interviewed Michael. Michael has a form of muscular dystrophy, as does his sister, Michelle. And they grew up in a very supportive family, have a lot of really amazing gifts, and are contributing to the world in some cool ways. And so talking with Michael and also his brother, Joy — Joy does not have a form of muscular dystrophy — about what life is like on that side of the disease, Joy, from the perspective of someone who is related to two people with muscular dystrophy, just gave a fresh perspective of honor and dignity for those suffering from muscular dystrophy. And I hope you'll enjoy and gain some perspective listening to Michael as we think about a world where people face a number of kinds of limitations, as all of us do, and some are more visible than others. And I think what Michael and Joy have to share will enlighten us on how to approach life in a world where people's limitations are visible and some are hidden.
Yeah, so I was born just down the street, 3.5 blocks away from where we are, well, where Scott and I are, in Madison, Wisconsin, at St. Mary's Hospital in 1987, on March the 30th. And grew up, normal little kid, just getting into all sorts of mischief and skiing, playing soccer, climbing trees, going fishing, just having a blast with everybody. And then kind of along the way, at age 7.5, skip forward a little bit, I got diagnosed with this thing called muscular dystrophy. And to me, in my concrete thinking mind, at the time I had no idea what that meant. I mean, I just kind of knew that something was wrong with my body because I wasn't able to do as much as I used to be able to do. But there you have it. The diagnosis came, and Joey was born like the next year. I was still walking around, still having fun. The muscular dystrophy started to progress in my body, and so I needed to use a scooter. Then after having a scooter for like maybe 6 or 7 months, I had developed more into like the need to have a wheelchair. So that's kind of where I've been since about age 10, and I'm 28 now.
So at 10, mobility was really tied to assistance from a wheelchair or scooter.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
And where does your sister Michelle come into this story?
Yeah, so Michelle is 3 years younger than me. Lots of people think that we're twins, perhaps, or we've had like some folks hint at us like, oh, is that your boyfriend or is that your girlfriend kind of things? It's kind of ridiculous, but whatever, they don't know the difference. At any rate, yeah, she's 3 years younger. She had an onset slightly later, but we kind of knew earlier because Joey and her got tested at the same time. And here's an interesting thing, is I had to go in to have a muscle biopsy. So they did a surgery where they cut my leg open and pulled out some of the muscle. Then they had to ship it off and test it to see what was going on with it, and then confirm that it was, you know, type 2D muscular dystrophy of the limb girdle kind. And with Joey and Michelle, all they needed was blood drawn.
You get actual muscle taken from them.
Yeah, exactly.
They get the blood draw.
Yeah.
Why did they get off so easy?
I know. Tell me about
new technology.
It.
Really? So things had progressed so that they didn't need to take muscle samples.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so she... We knew as a family that she was affected. And Joey was just a carrier. So the way that it works is, genetically speaking, in our ancestry, like, there is no muscular dystrophy at all, but it's an autosomal recessive disease. So it means, like, you have to have two parents that are carriers of it in order for there to be an affected child. And so the likelihood of having two affected children is much less, but it just happened that way.
Yeah.
It's more along the lines that you can be a carrier of it. Yeah.
And Joy, do you have much memory of Michael Michelle when they were mobile and not confined to a wheelchair?
Yeah, so I have very limited memory of Michael walking. I remember his scooter, his red little fun scooter. But I have some memory of Michelle walking. Because I think specifically it was when, like, we went to, I think, Washington, D.C. I kind of remember some of that. And I remember for sure when Michelle is, like, transitioning the scooter. But, no, not a lot from way back. It's pretty limited. I have very few memories of them actually walking. So, yeah, most of it is once they've been wheelchair or scooter ridden.
And Michael, what have the various transitions been like for you? Are there, like, bigger milestones? Like, you remember the day that you had to start using a wheelchair, the day that you needed a scooter? Are there moments when mobility takes a dive and real transitions for you mentally, emotionally?
There aren't necessarily specific days that I can think of, but I guess due to the progressive nature of muscular dystrophy, it's like seasons, you could say, where you notice there's a lot more change. So it's not just one day I'm walking and one day I wasn't. It was kind of all throughout that 7.5 to 10 ages that were, you could say, a definite pivotal moment where I went from being ambulatory walking to wheelchair bound. So, but at that time, since I didn't really know all the ramifications of being in a wheelchair, I, in my thinking, just kind of kept on, you know. I noticed I couldn't do as much during recess, but I just kind of kept living life. My parents started to need to help me, so that was, I guess, a big deal. That was a moment that I can remember, like needing help going to the bathroom or getting changed in the morning. And then going forward from there, learning how to drive, I had to get, like, the specialized vehicle with a joystick and other hand control capabilities installed in it, which was a blast and a lot of fun, and I got to drive for a little while.
Yeah. What has that emotional journey been like of living in a bipedal world as someone who needs a wheelchair and experiencing the progression of MD?
Yeah, it's been really good, actually. And I say that because I've had great support from my family. And I think it also has to do, for the most part, with God and being on this journey with Him. Because without Him, I think we would be falling down to the wayside easily.
How about for you, Joy, growing up with a brother and sister with MD, and how that was different from maybe some of your friends who didn't have siblings with needs, same kinds of needs?
Yeah, I think it was, like, where we are now, I think it was, like, the greatest like, we have just such a strong relationship now. And, like, growing up, we'd bicker sometimes, but we really had, like, a different relationship and, like, a stronger relationship than, like, other family siblings. And I think that mainly stemmed from, like, I would be able to help them, and so that would be something, like, I had to do, like, through having to do that, like, it really, like, built a different kind of relationship and, like, care for each other. And so I think that's really, like, what really has, like, made our family as tight-knit as it is just, like, having a care for one another really has, like, solidified our bond.
Joy, what are some ways that you feel cared for by Michael and Michelle? What are ways that you feel like they contribute to the family, though it may seem to others like they require a lot of assistance, and yet you see an equation where they're really making significant contributions?
Yeah, I would say they give back emotionally and, like, in happiness-wise, and they give back, I guess, like, in ways they can, like, in giving, like possessions sometimes, or, like, buying me coffee, or... I don't know, being a great friend. And I guess, like, all the care that I've given really is summed up, like, back to me by just, like, being a great friend and being, like, just an amazing, like, sibling, really, and like, caring for me, like, emotionally, and I guess, like, looking out for me in life and giving me guidance, too.
Michael, I'm wondering how this world looks maybe differently to you than, I don't know if you ever imagine what would life be like if I didn't have MD, and how you might encounter the world differently and view the world differently, but yeah, what are ways that you feel like your view of the world has been shaped by muscular dystrophy?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of ways that I think it would be different if I were up and walking, which I am still believing that one day I will be again. But yeah, in the meantime, my mindset's definitely shifted towards noticing little things here and there that can make my life either easier or that much more difficult. Like anything from having a properly formed cutout on a sidewalk to having big bathrooms at public facilities to having a wide enough parking space so that the ramp can get up and I'm not, like, running into vehicles, to sinks that are open on the bottom. Yeah, there's,
or too high.
Or too high, yes.
Or, like, doors that don't open because, like, they only have hand pushers.
Yeah, there's a really neat door that's at Central Public Library here in Madison that all you have to do is just tap your foot against it, you know, instead of having it awkwardly positioned in a spot that nobody is going to be able to reach for that's in a wheelchair. This one is just amazing.
What about your view of suffering, difficulty, hardship, challenge? How's that been shaped in these years that you've had muscular dystrophy?
It's definitely been hard. And there are times where I just want to, like, give up in a sense. But I'm always led back to the hope that I have in Jesus. And then I think about how hard some other people might have it in the rest of the world, and who are getting, like, crucified, so to speak, you know, persecuted for either their faith or, I mean, other countries don't even have it as nice as we do as far as accessibility is concerned. So I think about those people who are not able to walk, and maybe they don't even have a wheelchair that's an electric wheelchair, you know, they're needing to be pushed around in a manual chair. It just would be so much more difficult. So I guess my perspective on suffering is, like, yeah, it's real and it's there, but then that there's always hope and in the midst of the trials.
Mm-hmm. How about for you, Joy, as you've seen the challenges that your brother and sister have faced, has it helped to shape your view of things?
I probably have like a more different outlook on life than like most of my friends, just because I see like the importance of caring for one another and like just how like important love is for like the ones that are around you. And it's really like having that like different relationship with my brother and sister has really like contributed to like viewing like suffering differently too, in the fact that like yes, that's bad and that's happening, but there's also probably good that comes of it, and there's also probably ways that other people have it tougher, and so you can always kind of try and find the good in the situation. And really, like, that's one big thing I've probably taken in my like mentality towards life, is I always really find the good in a situation, because I don't know, that's what I've done kind of all my life growing up with this kind of thing. And it really, I don't know, it just really, some people can be pessimistic and I just don't see the point, because it gets you nowhere and there's always good somewhere, so why not rest in the joy? Yeah.
Yeah, that's great, because it seems like you could get fixated on the limitation versus the possibility.
Yeah.
How about, Michael, just a little bit on what muscular dystrophy is and any prognosis for a medical cure for MD and that kind of thing?
Yeah, firstly, muscular dystrophy is a genetic disease that is progressive over time. So there are a bunch of various forms of MD, and the one that my sister and I are affected with, it's called limb girdle, which isn't as progressive as, let's say, the mainline one, which is called Duchenne's. Then there are other more severe cases where kind of right up from birth, a person is in a wheelchair, and that's called spinal muscular atrophy. And then you have forms that maybe don't even onset until 50 or 60 later in life, like Lou Gehrig's disease, which is also known as ALS. So essentially what muscular dystrophy comes down to in all these different forms is that the muscular system is missing a specific protein, and it's, for each one, it's slightly varied as to what protein that is. But because that protein is missing, then the muscle cells are not able to reproduce themselves correctly, and therefore they start to atrophy and wither away. Yeah.
Yeah, and also one thing I learned, I did a research project in high school, was that one thing that is different with people with muscular dystrophy is that the glue, so to speak, that like binds your muscle tissues together, in like a normal person, it like helps to like kind of keep the muscle tissues together and like be connected. But in muscular dystrophy, those, that glue is like lacking, so the cells pull away from each other, and they kind of, just the more they're used, the more they atrophy and like don't bind together. So they kind of waste away that way.
And Joy, what does it mean that you are a carrier?
That means that I have the gene that if I had, like if I married someone and had a kid with them, that if they were a carrier as well and we matched up like perfectly in the carrier of line, like then we could have a child with muscular dystrophy.
And does that affect how you think of romantic relationships? Like, I want to be careful to avoid falling in love with someone who's also a carrier. You feel like, well, I think it doesn't matter if I love someone, whether she's a carrier or not, we'll deal with kids as they come. Or I don't know, does that factor into your thinking with sort of girlfriend situations?
No, I've actually really never thought of that at all, besides when someone brings it up. It's not really, I don't know, when you think about relationships, like the goal is to grow your walk with the Lord and really glorify God through it. And so that really doesn't tie in. That, I guess it's like an afterthought, like maybe they have that random carrier gene as well. Like, but if it happens, like, I think God's still going to be faithful, and I'm still going to have an amazing, like, blessed life with and walking with him, and it's not going to change because if I were to have a kid with mustard dystrophy, it's sure it would be different, but there's blessings that come from that.
Right. It's a journey you've walked, and you're not afraid of it.
No, not really. No. There's good that comes out of it.
And Michael, how about your relationships with girlfriends or friends, and how that has been shaped by MD through the years in comparison to your peers, or how has that entered into the picture?
Yeah, there's lots of interesting things to say about that, where friends who you think might be close to you may potentially back off because they're intimidated by a disability, meaning that they think it's going to be too much work to carry on in this friendship. But then there are others who just fully embrace it, and they're like, man, you're just a normal human being, and so let's get to know one another more. You just may have some limitations, but we kind of all have limitations in varying degrees, whether it be like mentally or emotionally or physically. You know, there's lots of different ways that we could be limited, but let's embrace one another and let's like push one another and challenge one another with what we do have and live life out that way. And then right now I've got a great girlfriend. Her name is Shayna, and she is amazing. We've even kind of talked about like what would that look like if we were to, you know, have children and they be affected. And it's an ongoing discussion currently to see what that could result in. But
it's a point of discussion, but the relationship doesn't revolve around your MD.
Yeah, definitely not.
And what do you say to people who are intimidated or awkward or don't know what to do around folk who are in a wheelchair or have any variety of disability?
I'm just loving to them and joyful around them, understanding that the awkwardness can be broken if I decide to. Of course, if they decide to break the awkwardness, then by all means, they can go for it, because it doesn't matter to me whether or not people ask me about what's affecting me, coming up and saying, hey, what happened to you? Is this MS, or did you get paralyzed, or something like that? And then lots of people end up being so apologetic, and I'm just like, you asked the question. You don't need to apologize for asking a legitimate question. And I'm sure that there are people who do get offended because they're asked it so often, but my life is pretty open to the point that I might as well share it with other people, because that will draw them in.
And what about strangers staring? You know, you have a pretty public life. I mean, you're out and about quite a bit, so you're encountering the world of strangers. And how do you mentally adjust to people? Anything from innocent curiosity to being frightened to kind of feeling like, is this a weird form of entertainment for you to sort of watch me sort of wheel around or struggle with this? Or, you know, what's that like encountering a world that is just watching from the other side?
That's a good question. Whenever I come into moments like that, it could be one of two things, I guess. It could be fun for me, because they're like gaining understanding of my life. But I guess on the other hand, it could be a little bit frustrating at the time if I'm like attempting to do something and they're just kind of looking on, maybe thinking something like, wow, that must suck to be him, or what have you. But in the end, I don't know, it doesn't really affect me all too much.
How about for you, Joy, as you've, you know, seen people maybe staring at your brother or sister, or people who just don't maybe understand and are freaked out by the MD?
I don't know, it doesn't really bother me. I've never, I guess, I think it used to a little, because I was just like, all right, you've looked long enough. But now I kind of understand, like, it's some people just don't get what it is, they've never seen it before, and so they're just curious, and so, I don't know.
Like little kids, yeah. They'll be asking their mom, like, and they're really close by, you know, so innocent, they're little 2-year-olds, and the girl is like, mommy, what's that guy got? What is? Yeah. And they're like, oh, that's a wheelchair. It's like, can I get one of those? Or, you know, so.
Curiosity, you don't mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more so like, I don't know, it's more so a learning experience. Like, some even like middle-aged ladies will ask, like, oh, what happened? And so, I don't know, normally people are pretty friendly about it, or some will just kind of stare, and so like you just kind of accept it, like, oh yeah, we're here, you can look at us. What? So yeah, it's become, I don't know, very comfortable and not really awkward at all.
And we can really bring attention to ourselves if I've got Joey on the back of the wheelchair.
Yeah.
Something like that.
It sounds like it's been really helpful to grow up in a family that talks really openly and is quite accepting of this set of limitations. B, a family where faith plays a central role, and maybe talk a little bit about where Jesus enters the picture. Was there a time that you were upset, asking why, confused? What's the faith journey been like?
Me personally, I, at age 5, asked Jesus if he would be my Lord and Savior. And from that point on, then getting diagnosed and needing to move churches and like getting all these accessible things going on with adaptations to our house and vehicles and what have you. Throughout that time in my life, I don't feel like I've been mad at God. I've asked why, and I've come to some really good conclusions. I mean, we live in a fallen world and bad stuff happens, and I think just leaving it at that, and even saying I don't know sometimes why this is, instead of trying to conjure up reasons that could be against like what God's nature is. I just want him and his love to be known through my life in as many ways as possible. So yeah, I've asked why, haven't gotten mad at him, but still am in like a mystery, you could say.
Eager to see the next chapter and what unfolds.
Yeah.
How about for you, Joy, and your faith, seeing your brother and sister go through life with MD? Has there been a crisis of faith for you in that?
Not really. It's probably pretty similar. I was saved, I don't know, probably, or I like, it was similar to Michael, like at the age of around like 5, like 6 or 7, somewhere in those younger years. I'm not sure of what age I actually was, but this similar thing happened, and I never really was upset with God, or I was never really, I guess, I for sure questioned, and I wasn't sure why, but we've really talked about it a lot as a family, I think, and a lot as, like, together, and so that's really, I don't know, like, it's ultimately a personal, like, mystery, because we don't completely comprehend, like, the entirety of God's plan, but we can, I guess, trust in the fact that, like, good is going to come out of it, through it, and so, I don't know, I've never really had a crisis, really. I've always kind of just rested in the fact that it will be, I guess, I can't always comprehend it. So.
And Michael, is the form of MD that you and your sister have life-threatening?
Any form of muscular dystrophy is, since the heart is a muscle. But the life-threatening degree, I guess, if you want to put it on like a linear scale, is much further to the left of being on the left of that linear line is death, or I mean is life
less
versus
dying.
Yeah. Versus death. Yeah. So there's, I think, several people who are in their like 40s and 50s who are affected with muscular dystrophy type 2D, or limb girdle muscular dystrophy type 2D. Yeah.
And do you follow the research? Do you know how close we are to finding a cure? Is there such thing as the possibility for a cure?
There's always talk of it, but it doesn't seem like there's progress that is made, at least as fast as I would think that there should be, especially having all the money that's raised through the Jerry Lewis telethon. I've been called to go and be part of different case studies, but I've chosen not to, and I've kept up a little bit here and there on the latest news with where cures are for muscular dystrophy, but not very much, just because I think I would get so tied into that, since I'm very, like, obsessive and I like to know everything about everything, that it's more so good for me to stay away from that, because I might get upset at why it's not happening faster. How is all this money going to a cause and it not seeing any results?
Did you grow up watching the telethons?
Yep, and I was in the telethon many a times on the news stations even too.
The local.
In Madison, yeah.
Interesting. What does muscular dystrophy not affect for you? I mean, you're a really active guy. What things has it not impacted or prevented you from doing?
Well, for starters, I'm really into technology. So I'm capable of typing and using my MacBook Air and my iPhone. There are a couple things that I need help with, like connecting different cords and what have you, but as far as that area is concerned, technology is a big part of my life. So I'm fully capable of just working on websites and doing all that, still getting outside and able to go on runs and bike rides with people, because this wheelchair goes like 8 miles an hour, which seems fast, but I think it needs to get, you know, like 30 miles an hour or something like that. We need to get a highway regulation.
Yeah.
But that hasn't happened quite yet, because I don't think I want to fumigate anywhere that I go having like a four-stroke engine or something in this.
Inside the house, a gasoline engine might be a problem.
Yeah, you think, right?
But there's a lot of life that this really doesn't matter that much. Your relationships are rich. You've got a seminary degree?
Actually, not seminary. I graduated from North Central University, which is a Bible college. I graduated with pastoral studies, so being a pastor, and then biblical languages and Bible. And then evangelism, church planning, too. So pastoral studies was a major, evangelism, church planning, Bible, biblical languages were all minors. So took me about 5 years because I started out going for youth ministry and then switched like a year and a half in. But then I added all the minors on, so that didn't help to the cause.
Well, sadly, we don't have your sister Michelle here with us.
I know.
How would she reflect on some of these things? Has it been a very similar journey as you two boys? Has it been different as a female facing muscular dystrophy?
It's definitely been different for her, being a female. A little bit more difficult dealing with female things and just like connecting with other girls has been hard at different times for her. But even throughout all that, I think she's stayed on the up and up because we've got a good family and that support is there.
And what's it been like having a sibling with MD, if you can imagine life with you being the only kid in the family with MD? How has that sort of shaped the family experience to have two kids?
Definitely a big difference, I would say. Because if Michelle wasn't, I suppose she does see me, since I'm the elder brother, and kind of looks and sees what I have done and knows that she can kind of go after that. So if she weren't in a wheelchair, I haven't really thought of it too much, but yeah, it would be a lot different. She would be up and about and maybe not around Madison, you know, in her life. At this point, could be somewhere across the country. And I don't know if that would affect like my location or my vocation based on what she was up to. I mean, it could perhaps, because we always like to stay connected and be close in proximity if at all possible.
And Joy, how about you? You know, what's it like, how is it different interacting with your sister with MD, if at all, than having a big sister with MD versus having a big brother with MD? And then just what Michael brought up in terms of proximity. Sounds like you guys just like being around one another, and that would be true with or without MD. But
yeah.
Does the MD affect you as you think about the possibilities in the future of moving farther away? Does it give you some hesitancy? Or is it mainly just the strong relational ties that would keep you close by?
I think it's a little of both for me, because I think, like, no matter what, I just love seeing them and really hanging out with them. But also, I think, I don't know, I just have a lot of help that I can offer, like, being close by. And so I just think, I don't know, it's just a good thing to do, is kind of, like, stick near and be an aid when I can, because I don't know, often it's either overbearing for my parents, or sometimes it's just hard for Michael and Michelle to find someone to help at the moment. So I think it's both, because I love just like being around them, and because I think that's an area I can help serve them too.
Mm-hmm. And what about differences in having a sister versus a brother with MD?
Oh, okay, so with like Michelle having MD too.
Yeah.
I think that's been different because, I don't know, Michael and I are just both boys, so it kind of adds a different dimension to, I guess, the female aspect of things. There's different challenges and dealing with, I don't know, sometimes self-image and how you're perceived. And
it's not like we don't deal with that. But I think
yeah,
it's just more
true,
prevalent in her mind,
yeah.
I suppose, and by the external things that are going on, you know?
Yeah, the culture for women is much more focused on external appearance stuff than for guys.
Which is really sad.
Yeah, it is.
But she is a beautiful young girl.
She is.
Yeah, she is. We get told that all the time. Like, just, oh yeah, tell your sister she's like really beautiful or something, and so she definitely is.
Yeah. Do you think, Joey, that there would be a big difference if Michelle wasn't in a wheelchair?
I think we would just be more mobile. I guess we'd probably be a little spread out, more spread out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if she and I would be as close as we are. Because I think often we would bicker because we were the closest in age growing up. And so sometimes we'd, I don't know, just disagree on little things. And I don't know, I think that really has been mended a lot because of our, like, the way our relationship is. But I don't know if she would be off somewhere different or, I don't know. I think if she didn't have much of a, I think the family dynamic would be a little different. I don't know if it would be, I can't really say if it would be for, like, the worst. I don't think, I think it would be great either way, but I think that this, the distance factor would be a little different, that I don't know if everyone would have stayed as close as they have.
Yeah.
And anything that you guys would offer in the way of advice to parents of young kids who have a special need or have MD? The things you've appreciated, perhaps, about your parents that you would hold up as definitely do this, or don't do this if there are things that felt like were less helpful.
And give your kids hugs and tell them that you love them.
Yeah.
That's probably the two top things, more than any practical stuff, is those two are so effective to be able to live life.
Yeah. And just being really supportive of what they want to do in life. Really not, like, confining them.
Yeah, confining their desires based on their mobility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or creating a situation where your relationship with them is completely centered on the disability,
yeah,
or that becomes the thing that defines them.
Yeah,
very true. It can get to a point where if you don't have any help from a care agency, let's say, the parents are the ones who are taking care of the needs of their kid, and you don't really have much time outside of those needs being cared for to connect, I would say. Mm. Yeah, where your connection is helping instead of being.
Yeah, and maybe to close here, any thoughts from you guys on how not to overly define someone by a limitation, or particularly when it's a very visible one?
Sure.
Like, you know, all of us carry serious limitations in a variety of ways, but when it's very visible,
mm-hmm,
the tendency is then for that to become a hugely defining feature of your relationship with them or your view of them. Any thoughts on how to move past that temptation?
Hmm. Connecting with a person outside of their physical limitations, I think, is only possible by wanting to get to know them. So if you have a desire to know this person outside of, let's say, their shell, their earth suit, then that is a really good starting point. Like, I want to know you. I just don't want to know you in whatever form that may make it seem, as the rest of the world sees it, that, you know, you're not okay, or, like, this is just weird, or whatever, which, in a sense, it's weird, because it's not how the body was supposed to be, but, you know, it is what it is, and we are in the position that we are currently, so, yeah. having a just the desire to get to know somebody, no matter what their form is. I think that helps you to get past. Joey, do you got anything to add?
Yeah, I would just kind of say don't really like assume things about them until you get to know them. And because you can't really, you don't know like their story, you don't know who they are, you don't know like their personality until you like talk to them. And so you can only like see so much, and that's just the physical appearance. And so I'm sure there's tons of people that look similar, but they're probably way different. And so it's the same with someone with like a physical limitation. Like they may look one way, but their personality is probably quite splendid and different than other people's.
We can think things about people no matter what their physical look is. I found myself doing that just at the coffee shop here a little bit ago, and then finally striking up a conversation with them, you begin to lose those prejudgments or presuppositions about who this person is, because you're getting to hear their voice. Oh, that's what their voice sounds like. Oh, and this is what they enjoy talking about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we tend to view the world in two dimensions until we dive in and start interacting with people.
That's so true.
Realize, oh my gosh, they got a personality.
They aren't everything that I've been thinking inside of my mind that they were.
That's super prevalent at college because you just meet so many people. And so like a lot of what you know of someone is just based off that like 2 second like interaction you have. You don't really talk to them a lot. So it's hard to really understand people and get to know a lot of people because you only have those interactions. And so it's I think it's almost dangerous sometimes to like try and make presumptions about people because you just don't know.
Definitely.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Great to get some time with you and to hear your views on life, on the world, on MD, on relationships, on cheeses, and appreciate what you guys bring.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having us.
Thank you,
My little sister Allison was born with a pretty serious visual impairment, and just 7 years ago, she and her husband, Stephen, had Grace, who was born without hands or feet and born with a serious visual impairment as well. And it just sounds weird saying that, because visual impairment or being born without hands or feet so do not define these two ladies. Allison's brilliant, has served as a school teacher and does an incredible amount of work and, you know, beauty defined in so many different ways besides the fact that she's legally blind. Grace, probably one of the most vivacious and outgoing seven-year-olds you will meet, and bouncing off the walls energy. These are the things that define Allison, that define Grace. For them to be solely defined or primarily defined by an impairment that they have feels like such a robbery to those who might otherwise get to know them and benefit from the things that they have to contribute. I've appreciated recognizing that we can't define one another by things that seem so external and that often are the first things that we encounter about a person, but really have very little to do with their makeup. Now, to be sure, aspects of their impairments have shaped who they are, and I think given maybe special insight and special gifting to them, but really play such a small part in defining them. And my encouragement in listening to Michael and living with Allison and getting to know my niece Grace is just to set aside those things that feel like they loom so large, but play such a little part in defining the person. I hope you've appreciated listening to Michael, and will take that with you as you encounter people in your world who have a variety of limitations that feel very visible to you and to others, but mean so little as we grow our friendship and love and allow
people in those situations to contribute, just as we who have our invisible limitations get to speak and contribute into society and maybe don't get the kind of judgment that often comes with a visible limitation. So thanks for listening. Hope you tune in next time to Voices from the Center on the Overturning Tables website.